this is a special podcast of the National Secular Society's Secularism 2012 Conference, which took place on the 22nd of September 2012. This podcast is brought to you by The Pod Delusion, which is a weekly news magazine podcast about interesting things. From politics to science to culture, all from a sceptical, rationalist, pro-secularist point of view. You can find out more about The Pod Delusion at poddelusion.co.uk. But now, in this podcast, let's hear from Professor Ted Cantle, who opened proceedings. Ted Cantle is a professor at the Institute of Community Cohesion. His report into the Northern Riots of 2001 drew attention to the segregated ethnic and religious communities living parallel lives. His new book confronts the failures of multiculturalism head-on and establishes a new concept of interculturalism for managing community relations in a world defined by globalisation and super-diversity. So here's Professor Cantle with more.
Oh, good morning. Thanks very much. I'm really trying to put faith in a wider perspective of where we are in terms of globalisation and diversity, because the world is changing very, very fast. But I'm going to take you back first to the 1950s and 1960s, when we saw the birth of multiculturalism. And looking around the room, I think there's probably one or two people who can still remember the 1950s and 1960s. Might be one or two people who still think they're there. I really want to try and talk about how we've come into the present position and to see faith linked to the way we've done diversity over many years. Multiculturalism, in my view, the policies of multiculturalism are past their sell-by date. It's not just me that says that. Opinion poll after opinion poll in the UK shows that people are not confident multiculturalists. No politician will advocate on behalf of multiculturalism these days. Not just in the UK, but across Europe, that's very definitely the case. But we have a paradox, because, of course, the reality is that all societies across the world are going to become more multicultural. And personally, I'm absolutely in favour of multicultural societies. I just think we need to change multicultural policies. Whether you're in the UK, the rest of Europe, South Africa, South America, all societies are becoming more multicultural and will do so as globalisation progresses. The real challenge then is how we adapt our multicultural policies to this new reality of globalisation. So going back to the birth of multiculturalism, we started, of course, in the post-war period when British people saw themselves as a race, a white race. We invited people, particularly from the Caribbean and from South Asia, to join in the immediate post-war development. And many people from different backgrounds came to this country. The reality, of course, was very different from the optimism that they seemed to believe from the start. I was brought up here in London. My local newsagent, where I was a paper boy, used to have those apocryphal signs which said, "Room to let, no blacks, no Irish, no dogs." That was the cold reality that people faced when they came to the UK. We, I think, in Britain can be proud of the fact that we were amongst the first to develop anti-discrimination legislation, and it was very progressive. I think we can say that we really tried to value people's separate heritage and backgrounds and didn't go into the sort of assimilationist policies that the French and some of the others, other countries adopted. But the price that we paid was to perhaps keep people apart, to keep this sense of separation, and to develop what I later called parallel lives. In fact, in 2001, when I did the review of the riots, which you've heard referred to, we found, even as late as 2001, people in white working class areas and had no contact at all with people from different backgrounds, lived in fear and trepidation. Those from minority backgrounds often the same and had little contact with people from the majority community. So we had created a number of separate worlds, and we had reinforced that with separate funding, separate community leaders, special representation, and that was across the board, faith groups and ethnic groups as well. We actually compounded the problem as the years went on. And particularly, I think, since 2001, this is Gary Young from The Guardian, who says that basically once we discovered there was a Muslim community in Britain, we just simply viewed people as Muslims, gave them no other form of identity. We summoned them as Muslims, talked to them as Muslims, as though they couldn't possibly be understood as anything else. We immediately put them into that particular faith box. And the consequences of that wasn't just that it had an impact on their individual identity, but actually it meant that we moved away from the civic institutions and gave credence to a religion-centered approach, as Amartya Sen here has argued. The state itself actually created this sense of religious institutions, the very opposite of what actually the government was trying to do through the agenda known as the Prevent Agenda. So we hardened identities, we raised the boundaries, we continued to create this sense of separate groups. We didn't look for what we've got in common, we constantly looked for how different we were. Again, whether this was faith or ethnic groups. We didn't realise just how fast the world was changing, because here in London, we have over 350 languages. It's one of the most diverse cities, probably the most diverse city in the world. And we should be proud of that diversity. That diversity goes around the country. Even small places like Boston, Lincolnshire have 60 different languages, 14 different faiths. So diversity has become part of the everyday experience in Britain. But we still have failed to adjust our policies. We've seen the growth of diaspora communities, mainly religion-centered communities across the world. We've seen the growth of the internet, and we've seen a huge explosion of international communications. People on the ground, of course, are beginning to come to terms with this complex environment. They are beginning to develop mixed race and intercultural unions. The mixed race community in Britain is the single fastest growing community in the UK. And consequently, we see more people like this young lady who says, I'm a Glaswegian Pakistani teenager of Muslim descent who supports Glasgow Rangers in a Catholic school. The last bit is a bit dodgy if you know anything about Glasgow Rangers in a Catholic school. But the point is, we put her in a box. We see her as a Muslim. And that's the way the policies have become determined. And we fail to recognize actually people have multiple identities. And Baroness King here possibly has the most complex of identities that I've encountered. But increasingly, people have to come to terms with the idea that they have multiple identities and that it's very difficult to put them in a box. And this is a quote from a report which is entitled, You Can't Put Me in a Box. It makes the point that these categorizations that we rely upon, black, gay, Asian, disabled, no longer seem to be able to tell us much about the people, who people are, what lives they lead, who they identify with, or what services they need from government. And the tick box approach seems to be missing out on growing numbers of people who fall outside or across standard classifications. Yet society seems to treat ethnic identities as if they're clearly bounded, static and meaningful, and insist on a tick box classification. That's the situation that we have moved ourselves into. I think we've failed to see, actually, that people can actually have different identities at different times, move between different social and other groups, and that cosmopolitan identities are inevitable. And there is now becoming something of a conflict between people who now see themselves in multiple ways, see themselves sharing a common humanity with others, and those that insist on rigid classification supported by rigid community leaders, structures, and funding. And of course, identity isn't just about faith or ethnicity. We now see people expressing different forms of identity. 20 years ago, it was almost impossible for people to talk about their sexuality in public. Very different today. Disability, of course, has moved much more into the public sphere. The new Single Equality Act has 9 protected characteristics. We live in a much more complex world, and these attempts to drag us back into narrow groups where humanity is not shared is, in my view, a very dangerous position. And of course, we also see the impact of globalization and Europeanization. People fear their loss of identity as a result of the growth of corporate power. We see particularly the far right trying to capitalize on this, somehow pretending that we can turn the clock back. And I think, again, Amartya Sen seems to sum this up for me, where he draws attention to this conflict between the globalized world and the globalized forms of identity, and yet the world is increasingly divided between religions and cultures, which ignore the relevance of the other ways in which people see themselves through class, gender, profession, language, literature. It's the miniaturization of people as he sees it. So I think we have to move from multiculturalism to what I call interculturalism, the subject of my new book, which I promised to mention at least 20 more times before I finished. And I really feel that we have to undo the policies of multiculturalism in order to understand the position of faith and ethnicity that we are now in. And that means a number of particular changes. Of course, we still need a framework of tackling discrimination, promoting equalities. But we have to make sure that's not done on the basis of support to particular faith groups, particular ethnic or national identities. We have to ensure that we are creating ways in which we're tackling those problems in a mainstream way across identities, and by ensuring also that we're using the opportunity for people to be brought together. So if, for example, we're developing IT classes, why do we have IT classes on a white working class estate, IT classes for a black Caribbean community, IT classes for Muslims in a mosque? That's an absurd way of trying to create not only a sense of fairness, but actually bring people together to tackle the underlying problem, which would be the lack of IT skills. So we have to think in entirely new ways about the way in which we bring people together. And that also means that the system that we have of privileging certain community leaders actually takes people out of mainstream politics. It creates a sort of parallel set of political systems rather than actually bringing people into the mainstream political organizations that they can actually share common experiences. And when we develop remedial programs, develop ways in which we want to intervene, we have to be really sure that we are tackling needs in a culturally sensitive way. That can be done, but it has to be done through mainstream services themselves. Now, I'm not going to go through all these points. I was just going to make a point here about faith schools and how this, in many ways, exemplifies the problem that we've got ourselves into. Faith schools, of course, were the first form of education in this country. We then created a state system which filled the gaps, and that was possibly our mistake. We didn't actually reform the system itself. But as we became a multi-faith society, we recognised that it's impossible just simply to have Church of England schools and Catholic schools. As a multi-faith society, we then have to give schools to Hindus, to Sikhs, to Muslims, to all the faiths. So we simply add to the problem of creating a whole series of separate identities rather than tackling the fundamental problem itself. So we have to be prepared to think far more radically about the way we provide services and intervene. I've no objection at all to faith being in the public sphere, but if it is going to be in the public sphere, then contestation of faith also has to be in the public sphere as well. And that means a real challenge to the faith communities themselves. Actually, I see in quite a number of the different communities that have separate ethnic identities, I do see some change. I do see that they are collaborating more between themselves. They are understanding that people are creating more complex identities. But I don't see that in the faith sector. It's a real challenge to them in the way in which these issues like apostasy, mixed marriages, how they are actually failing to cope with a much more complex set of identities and constantly trying to insist on separate, pure faith, pure ethnic identities. And that is also true of the differences within faiths. The way we've created certain faith community leaders suggests that they are an homogenous group, that there is a way in which they see themselves as all being the same, which is a nonsense. And again, taking the example of the Muslim faith, it's probably the most diverse faith anywhere in the world, and yet we insist on trying to create some sort of set of leadership which attempts to represent the whole faith. And that's true of Christian and other faiths as well. We have to recognize that there's as much difference within these groups as there is between them. I have a little bit of difficulty with the term a secular society, because actually I feel that faith groups are perfectly able to express their views, to express their faith. It's freedom of expression. It's part of democracy. It's part of diversity. I want people of faith to be able to express those views openly. And as I have already said, that entails the opposite view as well, that if they are prepared to accept and present their views in a public forum, then they have to be contested in a public forum as well. But sometimes the term a secular society gives the view that we're trying to wipe faith off the face of the world. I think separate views are good for democracy and good for diversity. And the real focus, I think, of secularism has to be distinguishing a secular society from secular forms of governance. And that's where we need a much more hard-nosed view. So issues like funding of different groups, community leadership, faith schools are the ones to concentrate on. And I know that the NSS here does indeed do that. I really feel that we need to emphasize this isn't about the removal of faith. It is about trying to distinguish very firmly a secular form of governance. Just drawing to an end, I do think that people in Britain and indeed across Europe feel that their identity is under threat from numerous different aspects, from the impact of globalization, from the European zone, deindustrialization of so many traditional communities. It is a problem, and they link, I think, any aspect of tradition to that. So the loss of a Christian society will be seen as somehow part of yet another attack on their identity, which is already changing. We're already becoming globalized. 350 languages in London. People tend to retreat into their own spheres to try and hang on to something which they know. And I think we have to recognize that. I think we have to understand that there is some real impact on the way people are seeing themselves, and to help people move towards more cosmopolitan dynamic forms of identity. And as I've already indicated, that is not the current direction of government policy. I don't think it's the current direction of community policy either. We've actually had a lot of success. Britain is a very tolerant society compared with many other places in the world, compared with most other parts of Europe. And during the period of community cohesion from 2001, we've actually broken down some of those parallel lives. We've particularly promoted community cohesion in schools, and I think that's had a real impact on the way young people have seen themselves. We have to recognize that not all minorities are disadvantaged. We've tended to have this view that if somebody is not white, they're from a black minority, somehow they're underprivileged and suffering disadvantage. That's not necessarily the case. Of course, there is real discrimination still, but we have to have a much more intelligent view of the way we address diversity. Actually, in the last 10 years, people have increasingly said they get on well with people from different backgrounds, which is quite remarkable considering the anti-migrant sentiment, the growth of the far right. We've had some effect in communities. So I think Britain is now actually probably a more confident and tolerant multicultural society. But in order to make the change that we now see is necessary as a result of globalization and these other impacts, we have to move to a much more intercultural view of the world. And I hope that the National Secular Society here will see faith as part of that change and will help to move from multiculturalism to interculturalism. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much to Professor Cantle for getting us off to a roaring start. We're going to take some questions. We've probably got about 5 or so minutes because of our schedule. What's happening now is we're going to have some of our stewards. They are going to have handheld microphones. I'll ask you please to put up your hands if you want to think of a question. And when you get the microphone, could you please keep it concise so we give as many people a chance to speak as possible? And stewards, could you please make sure the microphones are switched on, give it a quick tap and make sure it's working? Can we get a microphone, please, to the gentleman in that row there? Thank you.
Good morning, Professor. The question is, what can you tell us about your research and possibly the experience and the effect of studying and basically socializing in a kind of faith school that is kind of exclusionary, at least to some extent, in the later life and the and work as adults as compared to people who have studied in a kind of mixed and secular school? Thank you.
There's some very extensive research being carried out now, not by myself, but by somebody called Miles Houston from Oxford University, and you can Google him and find all of his work, where he's actually comparing different types of schools and young people's experience of mixed schools, separate ethnicity, separate faith schools. And he is finding, and there has been other research which has shown, that people that grow up in multicultural environments, in a more mixed environment, have a more open view of the world, are more tolerant of difference, are more able to cope with difference in later life. And there's plenty of evidence from research around the country, actually, which shows that that is generally the case, not just for younger people, but for older people too. Those that have more opportunities to mix with others, meet people from different backgrounds, become more tolerant, more open in their points of view. And of course the opposite is true. Those that live in very insular environments actually have more prejudice, they have more stereotypes which they find difficulty in overcoming. So there is clear evidence that people that do actually grow up in those sorts of environments which are more mixed and more open will be less prejudiced and will be more able to cope with a globalised world and a globalised environment.
Any other questions, please? So move it around the room a bit. Could you go to the gentleman there with the hand up with the beard?
There's a lady right at the back.
Thank you.
Hello.
Thank you. And afterwards, there was a lady right at the back, wasn't there? Could we have you afterwards, please? Could the stewards get a microphone also to that lady following? Thank you, sir.
My name's John Beach. What is your definition of multiculturalism, and isn't this something which the National Secular Society should be opposing actively?
Well, my definition, really, of multicultural policies is that it's been about the promotion of separate identities and has reinforced those separate identities through funding and representation. That's been the effect of multicultural policies. And obviously that's something I want to undo, and so the term which I'm preferring to use, which is interculturalism, is the exact opposite of that. So very simply, I think multicultural policies have been about establishing groups and treating them as separate groups and reinforcing separate identities. There have been some good elements of multicultural policies that I mentioned earlier on, such as the anti-discrimination legislation. You know, that was a very positive activity. But at the moment, multicultural policy, not just for me, but for people in the streets, as you know, evidence from opinion polls, is about creating this sort of world of separate communities. And about denying a shared identity and social solidarity.
Thank you. The lady with the microphone, I hope, now.
She's just trying to get it.
Thank you. Following on from both questions, really, we all agree that state funding of church schools or religious schools shouldn't happen. But you said that people who grow up in multicultural societies, you know, influences are more open-minded. So how does freedom of expression go together with them being allowed to set up their own schools that are not privately funded? Should we be insisting that all children do not go to faith schools, whether they're privately funded or government funded?
Well, I've long been an opponent of faith schools, and In my view, all schools should be mixed schools. In my original report in 2001, in order to start the process of desegregation of those schools, I suggested that all faith schools should start by accepting that 25% of their intake should be from people of non-faith or no faith or other faiths. That was put as an amendment in an Act of Parliament. Unfortunately, it didn't succeed. The government then introduced the duty to promote community cohesion in schools so that the separate schools would at least twin with other schools and so on. And that has had some impact. But in my view, it's not sufficient. And we're just compounding the problem. The more we add on separate faith schools, the more we create greater divisions. I have to be clear about this, that if there is a Church of England school or a Catholic school, then the Muslim community, they have a right to have a Muslim school. But I would much rather, of course, that we ended those sorts of divisions completely and created more mixed schools. Not just mixed from a faith perspective, but actually from other perspectives as well, because we have got some pretty difficult separate groupings elsewhere. So I think we've got to have a much more determined effort. Somebody was saying to me the other day, why don't we just go down the Brighton route? If you remember, Brighton had a lottery for its schools, and you know, there is some merit in that. I think whichever system we choose, we've got to try and make sure that children grow up in a multicultural, multi-faith environment. And as you know, the very first question pointed out, that will make sure that those children have a more open-minded approach. They have got less prejudice. They are more able to cope with globalization. The system of schooling that we've got at the moment condemns children, in my view, to a very limited view of the world. And that just has to stop. That cannot be good for the sort of globalized environment that we now have in this country. It can't be good for the way we do.
Thank you very much. I'll just go around the room a bit. You've had your hand up for a while there, sir. Then is there a lady there with her hand up with the blonde hair? Thank you very much. We'll take those two questions, and then we'll probably have to stop and move on. Our first question, please. Thank you.
Jeff Smith. In a situation of community tension, whether, say, violent riots or something of that sort, and a group define themselves as an ethnic or religious minority and identify certain people as their leaders, what is your alternative pragmatically speaking, but to dealing with what appear to be the leaders of the community?
Well, I mean, there's obviously a large, many parts of Britain where that is the case, and we've put in place quite a number of strategies to try and identify tensions before they arise, which we have as a sort of tension monitoring system, and try and intervene at an earlier stage. And the way in which we've intervened is by breaking down the barriers between the communities. I have to say, by getting rid of some of the community leaders that I call the gatekeepers of their community, what we really need is community leaders that are the gateways to their community, that open them up, that actually allow them to experience people from different backgrounds. And that means that in the community organisations, in schools, housing areas, community centres, there are now quite a vast number of programmes to try and break down some of those barriers. But as I've already said, you know, whilst that's happening at the community level, and there's some very good community cohesion programmes out there, at the state level there is still quite a lot of work going on which reinforces the separation. I mean, I can tell you, you know, more specifically about some of the work that's being done at a community level later, if you wish. It's probably just worth mentioning Northern Ireland in this context, actually, because the most segregated part of the UK is Northern Ireland, where, you know, we have separate Protestant and Catholic communities. You walk down streets in the centre of Belfast and you can come to a swimming pool for Catholics, and literally 100 yards away will be a swimming pool for Protestants. All the community facilities are divided. 96% of all schools are entirely segregated in Northern Ireland. No wonder, you know, we have the tensions that we've had. And we are trying to tackle that in the same way as between different ethnic and faith groups in the rest of the UK. We have to break down those barriers. We have to make sure these communities become much more permeable and open.
Thank you. And if you could have the last question, please. Does the person have the microphone?
Yes, thank you.
And could I ask, please, short question and Professor, short answer. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your talk. I'd like to just touch on national policy and tackling inequalities in particular. Working in the public sector, I'm very conscious that we've tried to put people into boxes which probably don't fit people any longer, but we've not even got as far as making that useful data which to address policy. I just wonder what solutions you have for the future in a more sort of diverse communities, how you actually identify inequalities and then address those.
Well, we do have to tackle inequalities. Obviously, just take one example. Schools will find that if they've got a multicultural school, perhaps if it's anything like the national profile, Roma children, Pakistani background children, maybe some of the back Caribbean boys and white working class boys will probably be doing the worst in that school population. So the way often the state has addressed that is by having separate programs to tackle that. That's crazy. We actually have to try and devise a program which tackles that disadvantage. It's focused on the need rather than on the identity. And I think that has to be the solution to all focusing of disadvantage. Let's tackle the need, tackle the disadvantage, ignore the identity.
Thank you very much. Could you please give a very warm welcome to Professor Deb Panzer?
This was a special podcast brought to you by The Pod Delusion. The Pod Delusion is a weekly news magazine programme about interesting things, from politics to science to culture, all from a sceptical rationalist, pro-secularist point of view. Essentially, if you like what you've just heard, then you'll like our weekly podcast as well. Head over to poddelusion.co.uk to find out more. But for now, thanks for listening.